Hi, this is Honey from MyHoneyWearsPlaid.com. Today is Thursday, August 26th, 2010, and on this podcast we will be doing a book club discussion of the book that we read over the last month and a half or so. And on this episode with me is Larkin. Hi, Larkin.
Hello.
We have Timothy, a listener from Minnesota, right?
Right. 8 inches, 20.5 centimeters.
You just had to throw that in there, didn't you?
Well, I went to all the trouble of translating it into centimeters for Arthur and Scotty. I just felt I needed to. You know, homework is homework.
Oh, very good. And we have Seder69. Hi, Seder.
Hey, how's it hanging?
Pretty good. Now, obviously, everyone is here because they read the book When You Don't See Me by Timothy James Beck. Did everyone actually get through the book?
Oh, wait, we were supposed to read When You Don't See Me? I read something else.
What did you read?
No, I'm joking.
I knew
someone like you.
I knew you were joking.
He's the one.
He is the one. Now you're naming other titles, right?
I am.
I knew it. All right.
Smart.
I have, once again, for the millionth time, I have too many freaking windows open, and I can't find what I'm looking for. I'm going to hide the Skype window. All right. So the book was When You Don't See Me by Timothy James Beck, and who of you would like to give a little, a little quick summary of what the book was generally about? Who would like to do that? Nobody's
okay,
ready?
I will.
Okay, Seder, we'll let you take the floor.
It's about a 19-year-old a young man who moves to New York City from the Midwest and is trying to form a new life for himself away from the confines of family and friends.
Okay.
I think, maybe.
The only addition I would put to that is that that he's not obsessed, but he has issues with 9/11.
He does have issues with 9/11, yes.
Okay. Now, Michael Sage just came online. I was wondering if he read the book. Did he read the book?
Do not know.
I don't know.
I don't remember either. Okay, well, what I want to do first before we get into the questions that we Scott got from the author was to talk just generally about what we thought about the book. If you guys liked the book, what did you like about it? If you didn't like it, what didn't you like about it? And just our general impressions about the book. And I think I will just start, just to get it going. I have mixed feelings about the book because there were times that I liked the book and there were times that I thought it was very boring and there were times that I thought it was way too hard to follow all the frickin' characters. Now, I know someone mentioned before that, and maybe it was you, Scott, that I don't know who did. All the characters most of the characters are from other books that were written by these people. And I should say, too, that Timothy James Beck, the author, is not one person. It's four people together who write the book over the internet together. They write all their books that way. At times I thought it was kind of boring and kind of slow. At times I didn't like having to keep track of so many characters. Since I finished the book just a couple hours ago, I kind of didn't like how he wrapped everything up, or they wrapped everything up in the last chapter and a half. They strung stuff out the whole book, and then all of a sudden, he's wrapping it up. And I thought that was just a little too quick. Now, I have read all their other books that they've done. Actually, I have them all in hardcover. And I just didn't remember the names that were in all these other characters' names. So that's what I thought of the book. Oh, Scotty in the chat room says, spoiler alert. Well, duh, Scotty. It's a book club discussion. Which one of you would like to tell us your impressions of the book and what you liked or didn't like? Who's next?
I'll go next.
Okay.
It was an easy read. Overall, to me, it was just something to read. It's all their books seem to be how do I want to put it? That everything always ends in all their books, rosy, you know?
Yes.
I mean, extraordinary things happen to, him. And even though in the book, I can't even think what his name was.
Nick, the character?
Nick, yeah, because it's been a couple weeks since I finished it. Even though Nick was going through all of this, the support network that he had behind him was phenomenal. And he chose not to. You know what I mean?
I totally agree with that.
I would agree with that, too.
I mean, how many of us wish we had a gay uncle or a gay... Was that... Well, yeah, I think it's a gay uncle.
That yeah, it was the gay uncle and his partner.
Yeah, I mean...
Let's add who are affluent uncle.
Yeah, I mean... So,
hands up,
I mean,
everybody who thinks that the kid deserved a smack from time to time.
Yes, I agree with that too.
You know,
and I say that with Christian love and charity in my heart.
He deserved a smack when people were throwing him a bone and he wasn't taking it.
Yep.
So sorry to interrupt you, Larkin. Go ahead.
No, and that's my. You know, I mean. I guess if you read earlier books, I think Nick was first introduced in I'm Your Man, maybe, which was the third book in the series when, I'm not quite sure though, because it's been a while since I read that one. But Nick was in one of the previous books, actually in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, you know, dealing with his stuff there.
Yeah, I tend to remember that part, too. Especially at the end there, in that last chapter, when he went to Wisconsin. When was it?
Yeah.
Where was it?
Yeah.
Is it... How do you say it? Eau Claire? How do you say that?
Eau Claire.
Eau Claire.
Eau Claire. It means clear water in French.
Okay. Yeah, because another one of the books, the guy's house that he went to stay in, that I remember that from one of their other books.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
No, and that's, you know, to me, it's too good to be true, kind of. And I like books that tend to not end that way, that are, you know, more realistic in how they portray people. Yeah. I mean, he just, all the characters throughout all their books, people just happen to fall into things.
Well, a good question, I mean, to be more specific about that for your topic is, the brother, Chuck, the majority of the book, we hear that he's this rotten person, terrible person, mean to his twin brother, all this stuff. Then all of a sudden, that phone call, he starts to change.
On Thanksgiving, yeah.
Yeah, and then you have that one little change there, and then at the end, he's like his brother's best friend. It was kind of, it was too much of a jump for me, I thought.
Yeah.
Well, for me also on that subject, is that the brother starts in towards the last chapter, starts making him see things that we as the reader never got to see.
Right, we didn't get to see half of that stuff.
No, and I don't believe in previous books that was ever really talked about either. Not that I recall.
All right. Before we move on to Timothy's chance, let me add Michael Sage, because he's... he just came in the room and he finished the book and said that he would certainly like to join. So let me add Michael Sage to our conversation. Hopefully he's ready. I didn't even think to ask if he was ready. Hi, Michael.
You're on. Sing Hello. Out, Louise.
How are you, Michael?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Pretty good, thank you. As you probably heard on the stream, we were just going through each of our impressions of the book and what we liked and what we didn't like. And we were just about to move on to Timothy.
Okay, well, I'm here. Let me know if... Do I need to quit the stream? Is there an echo or anything?
No, but it's probably driving you crazy in your ear, if you can hear it.
With that, since all I need to do is hear you guys. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. So, Timothy, what did you think of the book and your impressions and so forth?
Well, first of all, I've been a big fan of all of you and so many of the podcasters in the stream, and I just want to thank everyone for the hours and hours of enjoyment that you've given me, and so I'm glad to be able to join in on this. And when I heard about the book club, I had been a big fan of Timothy James Beck for years, and had read this book when it first came out in 2007, and was was curious, and so I went back and reread it, and I then went and looked for a website for the author, and that's when I discovered it was written by four different people. And I hadn't known that all those years I'd been reading the book, hadn't really troubled myself to do that research. And I also had wondered why Timothy James Beck hadn't published. Timothy James Beck had been publishing pretty consistently up until 2007, and then just kind of dropped off. And so taking all of that into consideration, I think out of all of his work, this kind of is the weakest. It really, to me, feels. It made a lot of sense once I discovered it was written by four different people, because I think you get four different voices quite often in this novel, and they don't really hang together the way that they have in previous books. And I thought that it was kind of modern Dickensian to me, that they sort of had these quirky characters that kind of come in and leave, and then there are some characters that are so good, they just seem way too good to be true. And quite often, I would grow exasperated with the protagonist, Nick, because I thought he really deserved a good smack. I was intrigued because I live about 2.5 hours away from Eau Claire. And in many ways, I think Eau Claire gets kind of a bum rap for that. I mean, for one thing, Eau Claire has three gay bars in it. So it's not exactly like it's the end of the world kind of thing. I mean, that's not the only thing that makes for a community, but I just sort of thought that the kid was awfully hard on his own family, certainly his twin, and the way that the uncle is sort of introduced in the beginning and then kind of comes in like a shining knight at the end, and there were so many different storylines that really, and so many characters to me that seemed unnecessary and kind of confusing. And frankly, now that I am an older man, the storyline I thought was the most interesting and could probably stand as a novel in its own right was the kind of a romance or affair that he has with a construction worker. Mm-hmm. The older man. I mean, you know, it was kind of, there's not a lot of sex in this book. I mean, not explicit sex, and that's not what I'm necessarily looking for. But in many ways, the person who kind of called him on the carpet and kind of called him on his stuff was this older guy, and yet was very caring and loving and sensitive to him. And I wanted to know more about that relationship than a lot of the other ones. And I thought the twin thing with the boss and the roommate, and that he had a twin, was a little bit overplayed.
I completely agree. I did not like that a bit. I'm like, why in the world are they making this connection between Bailey and Morgan? Who gives a shit about that?
Yeah.
You know?
And it seemed really far-fetched. I mean, New York is just a tiny bit bigger than Eau Claire. And so it really... It seemed a little far-fetched to me, all of it. A lot of it seemed far-fetched. And I do want to say, for anybody who's listening... He's the One is one of my all-time favorite gay novels. I really enjoyed it, and I really do enjoy the work of Timothy James Beck, but I think this is the weakest of the four I've read.
Well, now, let me ask you this. Did you read the book called The Deal by Timothy Lambert and Becky Cochran?
I don't think I read that one.
Okay, because I read that way back in 2004, and I wrote about it on my website. Excuse me, I'm in that phlegm issue again. I wrote about it in 2004 on my blog, and Timothy Lambert, the guy, one of the authors of the Timothy James Beck person, he left a comment on my blog back then, saying thanks for mentioning my book and all this kind of stuff, and I thought that was really nice. But, of course, things, get away from us, and my comments have all been lost back in the early years of my blog.
Well, you were virtually a different person back then, honey, weren't you?
That's true. I totally was.
I think that was one of your many personalities, dear. Take a pill.
I know, seriously. Okay, so Michael Sade, or were you done, Timothy? Was that everything you wanted to say?
Yes, other than I really do want to reiterate, because I know you've got such a huge following of the people who podcast and spend so much time and energy, and I just want you to know, for somebody who doesn't have a website, doesn't have a blog, doesn't podcast, how much it means to me. Really, thank you all so much from the bottom of my heart, because it really provides me with hours and hours of entertainment. It challenges me to think about things I don't normally think about. I hear from people all the way from Auckland and Brisbane to to the outskirts of Washington, D.C. It's just, it really means a lot, and I think you folks don't hear that enough.
Well, you are so sweet. That's so nice of you. Maybe you need to get a website and a podcast and, you know, all that stuff.
Well, maybe when I retire.
Well, are you on Twitter at least?
Yeah, I hate it.
Oh, you hate it. Okay.
Well, I'm not a big Twitter fan now, but but I really do enjoy all the hard work everybody else does. Thank you. It's very much appreciated.
What about, I know I'm getting off track here, but what about playing?
It's your show.
I know. What about playing Crank and Words with Friends? Are you into that?
Isn't Crank a drug?
No, Crank's an, I don't know about that, but it's that trivia game that everyone plays on their iPhones and Androids or whatever.
There, you just said it is a drug.
Yes, that's true. It is a drug.
I'll keep it in mind.
Okay. All right. Well, then we'll move on to Michael Sage. Michael, thank you for joining us. What did you think of the book and what did you like and didn't like, etc.?
Well, I did. This was the first of the series that I've read from these collective authors. And like I said, I just finished it like an hour ago. I said that in chat. And I'm really preoccupied right now with staring at the word honey on the Skype screen so that I don't say the wrong word. I got to put that out there.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, come on. All these years. But okay. Honey. Okay. Hi, Timothy. Changing the subject. Hey, Sater. Hello, Larkin. And hey, honey, okay.
Oh, my God, I'm hello, so sorry. Michael. Did I not introduce you? This is Michael Sage. Everybody, this is Michael.
Close enough. Hello.
Hello, Michael.
Hi. This is definitely the first book I've read. And I agree with you guys so far. I mean, it's just like I found myself, you know, he's introducing all these characters. And, I'm thinking there's going to be a reason they're going to play a pivotal role in the story later. And some of them just disappeared. Now, maybe it'll be in, is there a book after this one or is this it?
I think this is their last one.
Yeah, so there's far, four books it. Before it.
Cause they've moved on to just writing other things, I think.
Oh. Yeah. It looks like they've moved on to other projects. I don't know that they would ever answer this, but I'm curious about if sales had something to do with it or if the reviews for this one weren't as good as the reviews for the other one. I'd be interested to know that, but I doubt the authors would, say anything about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would too. I just found myself thinking, that a lot of these characters, they must be being introduced for a reason, and that never, really came about. I did like the journey. I liked the way it was written in, like you said, different voices, and you really got sort of like these different aspects of Nick's personality, I guess, even though sometimes they didn't seem cohesive. For me, they didn't seem like one, it was coming from any one person. But I could kind of get it. I mean, because, I'd go back to, he's the character's 19. You know, he's not quite sure where he's going. He's figuring it out. I think they did a really good job of showing his journey, from being just couldn't be bothered to having to get out of Eau Claire and then finally finding something in the arts where he was challenged and something that actually made him happy. I mean, the one sentence that he said that is when he's working with Jatella, that's the one time that he's really happy. Yeah. And that was kind of good to hear because I was getting a little frustrated in the story because I thought, what does this kid care about? You know, I mean, it didn't even go back to some of the, simple stories where this kid just cared about sex. It wasn't even about that, clearly. So I thought, okay, well, he's an illustrator, he draws, but that's sort of being pushed in the background, and I was wondering when it was going to come to the forefront again, when it was going to be his saving grace. And in a way it was, it just looked different than I thought it would. For having it be my first novel by this group of writers, I didn't hate it. I enjoyed it. It was an easy read, it was pretty fast, and but I wasn't happy with the ending. I turned the page and I was like, no.
See, clearly, I was the same way. As I said earlier, I don't know if you heard it, but I thought the ending came on way too quick. It wrapped up way too fast. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I liked the fact that, with his twin Chuck, there was a lot of of the onset. It didn't get all spelled out for us. There was some kind of turning point for Chuck, and we didn't see that, you know, because the story wasn't about him. So we didn't get to see what turned him from being a total prick, which we were led to believe through the whole story, to this kind and understanding and caring guy who just missed his twin brother. I mean, I got the whole connection with the twins and that there's something deeper there than most people understand and most siblings understand. But there wasn't anything explained as far as, I don't want everything explained to me in a story. I want to make things up for myself after the fact. It gives me something to think about after the story, after I've read the book. But there was something lacking there for me. I think it just ended a little too soon.
I agree. Some,
one sentence would have been all it would have taken for me to go to get that to let go, like that suspension of disbelief, to just go, okay, I see why Chuck came around, or I see where Chuck's coming from. Some sort of a window into that character's soul, and I didn't get that.
You know, and along those lines too, with that same theory that you're working with there, is they could have spent more time on the Chuck character, or even whether it was long distance or not. Instead of things like this, now this is a part that I thought was totally useless. The whole thing about Gwendy using the insurance money to buy that warehouse, and then, I mean, that whole chapter, that was all, like, it was introduced and done in one chapter. Mm-hmm. I was like, why did they even need to bring that up? They already talked about her using the insurance money to buy the condo in the same building as Uncle Blaine so that the father could stay with her. I mean, I didn't. That was useless. That part was useless to me, I thought.
Did anybody else get the feeling that, it's, especially towards the end, this novel read like, to me, it read like a script treatment for like a Lifetime movie television for women and some gay men? It was almost like there really wasn't character development. It was more like, okay, this is reading more and more like a television miniseries.
Yeah, I kind of got that. I didn't know that's what it was at the time, but now that you say it, that's exactly kind of where I was, yeah.
Actually, that is true, because then each chapter could be looked at as an episode of the miniseries.
Right, and then cut to commercial.
Exactly.
I guess if you write as part of four people writing, you'd have to do that, wouldn't you?
That's a good point.
They'd have an outline in each, you know, and as they developed it, you know, people would be responsible for writing different parts.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I actually see that more when I think about certain chapters, like the chapter early on in the book when he goes into the bar, whatever the name of that bar is, and they introduce like 15 characters.
Yes.
And then they go away from that, and then you come back to like the chapter before the end. It was like the New Year's Eve party or the New Year's party, where we get to find out what all these different characters are doing. That what I'm trying to say is, makes me think that the person who wrote that chapter also wrote the New Year's Eve chapter, because it's all about the amount of characters that they can talk about in the chapter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But part of this, if you treat it as a series, which they really don't, but if they made it part of a series where you start at book A, you know, it had to be you, and work your way all the way through, you would know who the characters are.
True. But I read those books so long ago, I don't remember all the characters, because I'm reading books all the time, so I don't remember the characters.
The same was for me.
Yeah, and I remember one of the earlier books had the guys with the farm in Eau Claire. I mean, that was another thing, another kind of character motivation that didn't ring true for me, was they made it sound like, you know, here's this, he's the only gay kid in Eau Claire. Well, Eau Claire is actually, I think, probably about 100,000 people. It's a pretty good-sized town, and he's not the only gay kid. He had, you know, strong adult gay influences that he could go to. There's a community there. And they make it sound like, you know, he's in this one-horse town. Oh, but by the way out at the edgeserts of town is this, you know, they have this fabulous website, and they have this wonderful history and all that sort of stuff. And it was like, it just didn't fit for the motivation for this kid to go running to New York into the arms of his uncle, who's going to help raise him for the last 2 years of high school.
And, hello, if his gay uncle has been around for a long time, surely he had some dealings with him as he was growing up. You know, it's not like that's the very first time that he's introduced to his gay uncle, was when he went to New York, right?
His uncle was totally closeted.
Oh, did I miss that?
His uncle, yeah. Well, it was prior books, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Daniel
it's alluded to in this book.
Yeah, but if you read It Had to Be You, which is the one about Daniel, it starts with him dealing with the fact that he's gay, and took most of It Had to Be You dealt with Daniel Stephenson dealing with the fact that he was gay.
I have that book on my shelf, and I can't remember that. But remember, I have CRS. So.
CRS.
Well, yeah, doesn't anybody over, well, a certain maturity, it's funny because I think about this 19-year-old kid, and it was sort of like, I always liked older men, and of course, now I am one. But that was interesting to me, and I also think some of the other characters kind of had their own storylines. And now that you're mentioning this, Larkin, I'm remembering more and more from the other books where some of these people are coming from.
Well, what I did is, once I put it all together, I went and reread the synopsis of all the books.
I should have done that, too.
So that I could figure out who... And the only one that didn't fit in was Someone Like You, which was their previous book. And the only person that came from this book was Davey, who was a real sub-character.
See, I thought that I'd seen that name before. So,
and Someone Like You, I read it after I read this one, because I go, I don't know, I hadn't read that one, so I went to the Lavender Library and checked it out and read it.
Ah. Well, Larkin gets the gold star and is the smartest one in class.
Yeah, no kidding. He did the most research for this.
No, I didn't. I was just curious about where all these, because I read the books, but like it had been like 3 or 4 years since I read all of them, so...
Larkin, is that the Lavender Library in the capital city of one of the large West Coast states?
Yes.
So another podcaster who has a show and a great voice and is a volunteer there, right? On the board or something?
Yes, yes. And he's hot, too.
I wasn't going to be judgmental.
Because I saw a video of him at the Lavender Library.
Honey, I've seen pictures of him. You'll get no argument from me.
Okay, getting back to the book.
Sorry.
That's all right. No, I was wondering.
Is it getting hot in here?
Just a little. I was wondering if anybody.
He's my sister. It's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Seems like he's really committed to that, too, and it sounds like a wonderful library. We have a great library here, too.
Yeah.
I don't go to the library anymore.
They have a gay lesbian library there now?
Yes, in St. Paul. It's called the Quatrefoil Library.
Huh. I wonder, because I've moved here. I moved from Minneapolis to Sacramento 10 years ago, so.
Quatrefoil's been around for about 20, 25 years. They're small, but they're in St. Paul.
Yeah, that's, I can't even remember the bars in St. Paul. It's been so long.
Those have changed too, but Rumors Tricks? Is still around.
Was that Trix?
Rumors is Trix, yeah.
Yeah. Hello. Okay.
And camp, sorry, excuse
Hello.
Me. We were just taking a trip down memory lane. You were saying, honey?
You could do that another time. No, I wanted to ask of you guys, if any of you, like, connected to any of the characters on a different level than just reading about them. You know, did anybody say, oh, I'm kind of like that, or I know somebody who's like that, or... I personally,
I've had a couple dreams about the construction worker.
Oh, my God. I totally visualized that whole scene in my head. That was really good. But, no, I was going to say that I don't think they got into enough detail about any one character. And not even – I don't even think I felt like I was that close to Nick even.
No. He so was
– for me to make a connection to any one character. But I wondered if anybody else had.
No.
No. My main thing with Nick was I was just so annoyed at him. Come on. People are reaching out to you. Take a damn hand.
Now, give us an example of a time that you thought someone was reaching out to him.
Well, actually, it's more about when he goes back to his uncle's place for the first time, and the uncle's butler, manservant, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, I didn't get that relationship either.
He was like, well,
bottom.
We all miss you. Where have you been? And like, come on, just... Why are you ignoring these people who want to help you?
That's a time. One time that I thought was a time that I wanted to smack him was when his mother reached out to him in New York and invited him to dinner, and he was making it so hard to get together with her or to, you know, connect with her. And I thought, this is your chance. Your mother is coming to your atmosphere. This is your chance to start, you know, making this right with your family. And I don't think he took advantage of, I don't think he took enough advantage of that.
Well, we could say the same thing for Thanksgiving.
Well, totally. And the other thing too is, and it was funny, I was just having a conversation at lunch with two gentlemen who were both fathers and one a grandfather, and they were talking about their 20-year-old children. And I, thinking about this book and book club tonight, I said, well, you know, quite often with 19, 20-year-olds, it's all about them. They only think it's about them. And that's a perfect example. With the mother was going through a rough patch and really could have used some support and love from at least one of her kids, and she's kind of turned into her gay kid who can't be bothered.
Exactly. I was thinking the same thing. She spilled it all about possibly divorcing his father, and he did not, at least I didn't think, he didn't do enough to you know, grab onto that and use that as a chance for him to make it up with her. But instead it was all about a credit card and how much he could charge on the credit card.
Yeah, oh, see, I guess I didn't have as big an issue with it because the part that was that kind of got into, but is he didn't have the best life growing up. And true. His mom wasn't supportive and she was cold and distant.
Now, I'm going to pause you there, Larkin. He says he didn't have the best life, but later when we meet Chuck towards the end, Chuck tells him he had a great life and he chose to, like, ignored and squandered away.
I was going to say the same thing because Chuck told us all the same. He goes, did you actually get hit? Did you get, you know, beat up? None of these things actually happened to him. They just threatened to do it, and he used that.
But being threatened, I was threatened through high school. I had this one kid, his name was Sam, who harassed me for 3 years. I was never physically hurt, but emotionally I was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to me, that's just as bad, if not worse, than being physically hurt.
No, I totally dig what you're saying, but at the same time, Nick has been telling us through the novel how horrible his life was. His brother was a big bully. His mother and father ignored him all the time. And yet what his mom does in that restaurant is not the actions of a mother who's been ignoring her son all the time.
Again, I would say it always comes down to all of us, probably some part in our life, if people come out and point out other views, because you only can take your point of view of life, right? If
true.
People aren't giving it in the past. And if they never told him their point of view, how would he know? Everybody, you know what I mean? Especially that age of, you know, nothing's worse in this life than a teenager.
Yeah, but it sounds like remember at the last chapter of the book when he was talking to Chuck about all this stuff, it sounded like Nick was making it very hard for his family to tell him how he feels, because he kept turning them off and he would ignore them and go away from them, and he wasn't even giving them a chance.
But he did that to everybody. Did he not do that to almost everybody in the book?
Yes, that is true.
Pretty,
you know what I mean?
Except for Roberto. He really was connected to Roberto.
Yes.
Well, and did you think he was maybe a little in love with Roberto?
Yes, but I think he was totally standoffish because of Roberto's
HIV positive, status.
Yeah, HIV status.
You know, to get back to your question.
Roberto was straight.
Right, Roberto was straight, but I think he played enough with Nick to...
God, I want to touch on that about Roberto's straightness, because although we're told Roberto is straight in the blog, in the Barista Boy blog,
yes,
everything that the Barista Boy talks about is true. It's all
right.
Based on fact. And at one point, he says that Roberto is closeted and in love with Nick. And I was like, and then they ignore that fact.
Yeah, that didn't go anywhere, because I don't remember that.
And that kind of leads to one of the questions that Scott got from the authors, which is, you know, the kind of the things that are in the book that may or may not be real. And one of those things. But I just wanted to touch on the original question from Honey, which is, for me, the strongest drawn character, the one that I can clearly visualize in my mind when I was reading the book all the way through, was always Morgan.
Really?
I mean, I couldn't even really picture Nick. I mean, I could never keep track of how many tattoos and how many earrings he had. And
well,
how many
piercings. He only had one tattoo.
He got the one tattoo, but then he had, you know, there was always the debate about when he would get it and then how many earrings he had. But Morgan, I just had really a clear vision of with the two snakes and everything else. And she's always so crabby and grumpy that maybe it's because she reminded me of a lesbian roommate I had at one point in time.
You know who the picture in my head I got of her? Because she was the one in the tattoo parlor who worked or got tattoos, right?
No, she worked at the sex shop.
Oh, that's right. I'm getting confused then. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think that question about what is reality and what isn't reality, because there's the whole question of, was it Barista Boy or wasn't it Barista Boy in the sauna at the spa?
Oh, yeah. Do you think it was?
I think in some ways the question isn't answered. And I think, like life, I mean, that was one of the things I did like about the novel. I liked kind of what they were doing was, like some things in life, you never get the answer.
Well, that sucks.
Well, but I mean, that's the creative art form, honey.
I know. You know, but I actually was, when he was describing the whole getting the massage and then, you know, getting the hand job and all that, I was thinking it was Roberto.
So was I.
I mean, until we find out that
it couldn't have been.
Right.
And it's obviously to be led to believe that it's the guy who's giving him the massage until you find out he's straight.
And then who does he see at the massage place? Fred.
Right,
Barista Boy, yeah. So.
But Fred says that he has no interest in him, so why would he have done that? Because Fred is after Davi, who, funny enough, all of a sudden, towards the end, shows interest in Nick that he has never shown anywhere else in the novel.
Right, but they're just going
to... I thought that was odd, too.
I thought that was really odd, the very last four or five pages.
I had to go back and go, who's Davi? I can't remember who you are.
I mean, same thing. But it was funny because he's like, oh, we'll just go out for a meal, and then if something happens and we want to turn it into a date, that's fine, too. I'm like, where did this guy come from?
Well, and on top of it, I thought, you're both 19. You won't even make it to dinner.
That's right. So
have we just bored Michael to tears or just completely?
No, I'm listening. I wanted to know, at what point did we learn that it could not have been Robert in the steam room? Did I miss? I think I missed something. Other than that, he's explained as being straight. Is that the thing you guys are talking about? That he's straight, so it could not have been him?
Well, kind of, but no, wasn't...
He was doing something else. Wasn't he getting some other treatment or something that would have prohibited him from being in the steam room?
He was getting his hair done or his nails done.
Yeah, he was having something else done. But I consider it I just thought that if he's in the same building as early as everyone else, then it could have been anybody.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, well, it could have been either one of them.
Yeah, what led me to believe that it was Robert was the way that it was described that his. That Nick reached down to touch the guy and he forcefully put his hand one on top of each other on his chest and held them there as if I don't want you to touch me to know who I am kind of thing.
But I'll continue to give you pleasure.
Right.
You know, I saw a movie once that was a similar situation, but it turned out to be both of them. And the three... Anyway.
Really?
It was an art film.
Yeah,
I'm sure it was.
Pornography.
we don't watch pornography.
It was extremely artistic. No, we read. We're literate.
That's right. That's right.
And you know the difference between pornography and art? Lighting.
Lighting.
But oh, now, I thought gauze like Barbara Streisand.
That's clearly not the music. That's the difference. That's for sure.
But now, did anybody else, back to my question about characters, did anybody else make a connection to characters?
I really did.
No, not really in this. No. Well, the only one really that you could connect to that was Nick. And, I mean, you know.
Well, no, like, I think you're given an opportunity to connect with Roberto. You learn a lot about him.
I think we get to connect with the four roommates, period, because we hear the most about those four people.
And what happened to the single mother, the Latina with the baby? I mean, she just did they wrap up her storyline?
Well, it depended on who was writing that chapter, because she was there sometimes and then she was gone the other times. But now,
yeah, she wasn't at the New Year's Eve party where everybody kind of got wrapped up.
No, but they had said that she was visiting a family or something out of town or something. That was her excuse.
They put her on a bus, is what they did.
Yeah. And then that was it. You never hear about her again.
Shipped her back to California.
Well, and also, what was the point of that character? I mean,
thought it was a possible connection for Roberto.
So did I.
Well, yeah, I mean, but Roberto, yeah, okay. I mean, it just seemed like they were trying to show Nick was being kind of a caring. That also seemed out of character that he'd go out of his way to befriend this young woman and the kid and everything else. Yeah. Whereas it seemed much more in character for Roberto to befriend.
Exactly. Well, the question there is, if he is able to spend that much time with a total stranger and her kid, why didn't he go and spend time with his quote-unquote cousin, Emily, you know, every other day or so?
Right.
He stayed away from Emily all that time.
And the backgammon game with Emily's grandfather, I mean, it's kind of coming out of the blue. Suddenly they're playing backgammon, like they're dear old friends, and you've never heard of this guy.
And we never hear from him again.
And I don't recall him from any of the prior books.
No, I don't either.
Because he's Gretchen's father, and Gretchen died in 9/11 at the Twin Towers, which is a whole other thing I want to go into. I mean, if you're ready to go there.
Let's go.
Well, okay, then my question is, why the obsession with 9/11? He was so fearful of everything from 9/11, and he didn't even live through it. I mean, granted, he knew Gretchen, who died in the towers.
No, he was in New York.
He was there.
Oh,
yeah,
he was there
when it happened.
Oh,
yeah,
he
was
there after.
He was like a lot of other New Yorkers. The New Yorkers I know were profoundly, profoundly affected by that.
Why did it take him so long to move on?
I know people who live in New York who still haven't moved on. I don't know
what they're wholeheartedly with that.
Okay.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Go ahead, because I got to clear
it. To me, in some ways, I found Gretchen to be one of the most interesting characters in the book, the ghost. And in fact, that was something I found to be very Dickensian. And I kind of want to know now if, you know, Gretchen's partner would have built a mosque instead of doing a but that's just me being glib. But no, I mean, the people I know, not only who were in, and I know, honey, that you don't live terribly far from the Pentagon.
No,
but the people I know who worked in the Pentagon, but the people I know who lived in New York, who talked about, you know, having to walk across the bridge covered in dust to get home, that you couldn't get home on the subway and stuff, that just shook everybody down to their absolute core. And it's something that they'll never forget. So to me, that didn't seem overdrawn or overblown or overdramatic.
I guess for me, they kept it was a slow progression to getting to the point where we realized, yes, Gretchen died in the towers, and her connection is her partner, Gwendy, and that they have the child, Emily. I mean, to piece all that together, that seemed to take the entire book to get it all out there. When that could have been the beginning to us understanding Nick, why he was so fearful.
Yeah, because you don't even find out about the cause of his fears until about at least a third or halfway through the novel.
Exactly.
Well, I think they did a real... Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Michael.
I think they did a really good job of using 9/11, of creating, I think, the sense that everyone felt for several years and even now afterwards, as far as like looking up what it means when you look up and you see the empty sky, where, you know, you're so used to seeing these buildings take up the space and it's a part of it's ingrained in your memory. And I think they really did a really good job of having the Twin Towers become a character in the book itself, without overdoing it too much. I think I'm not quite sure what the point was of, showing Nick's journey, going through his journey as far as his fears and stuff, as taking as long as they did, I think. I'm not sure about that, but I think they did a really good job as far as using the Twin Towers as a character in their own right. I mean, they did a really good job of conveying what it feels like to this day to look up and see that empty space there and know it's not right.
Yeah, I agree that they actually they used it appropriately and they did a good job of weaving it. But I guess I can see it as like two different storylines. Nick is scared shitless about all this stuff because of 9/11. One, two, he doesn't know where he's going in his life and he doesn't know what to do. I mean, that was like two completely different storylines running together. Did anybody else see it that way? I guess not.
I did to a degree. I mean, I thought there were way too many storylines in the novel itself. But I also think they could have. I agree. They could have introduced. I mean, basically, he's dealing with post-traumatic stress syndrome, like a lot of people in New York continue to. And I think one of the things when you read this book, you have to remember it's. I think it takes place in 2005. We're reading it in 2010.
No, I think it takes place in 2003.
2003. So, I mean, it's still extremely fresh in everybody's mind. And everybody is walking around with this open wound and kind of dealing with it in their own way. But they did take a long time to get to it. It would have been like, you know, for me in the first chapter, the second chapter, having him freak out on the subway would have kind of explained a lot and moved me forward on that storyline.
Yeah, because that's exactly, I had the same reaction. I'm like, what is it? Why is he doing this? Why is this guy freaking out on the subway? And we didn't hear about it for a while later.
Well, his thing was being trapped. You know, being in a subway, you're trapped.
Or a tunnel, or a bridge.
Yeah, any place where you didn't have easy exit.
Is that supposed to be like a, I don't know, like a connection to being trapped in Eau Claire?
No, that's a feeling of dying if a plane should bomb New York again.
Right, I get that literal connection, but I mean...
Oh, that's all it was, honey.
Okay. I'm creating something.
Don't
go, that
you don't have to look any deeper.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, but how do you think, I wish that, I mean, going with that metaphor, it would have been interesting to find out how he felt trapped underneath that construction work.
Oh, God. See, now that's something that would have made that book so much better if that was a reoccurring character more than just at the bar and in bed. Now, if he
with pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, now we want a picture book? A
picture book.
Isn't it funny that it was a construction worker who was helping him rebuild his life, though?
Very good.
Sater, you get the gold star again.
Yay!
For seeing things that I didn't see. No, you're right.
One of the other things that bothered me, though, was I do agree with you guys, because I got that sense from the story, too, is that you wanted to slap him. You wanted to just bitch slap him in the back of the head a couple times for not reaching out to the people who cared about him. But at the same time, I was getting really annoyed with all these people who would, you know, after all these months, come into a conversation with them and say, oh, Nikki, you did so much for us. You stepped in. You allowed us to grieve. And then you just disappeared. You know, like, you know, don't be that way. And there's all these people that are telling this then 17, 18 year old kid, we went through 9/11 and you were so great. And then you disappeared. Oh, don't be that way. And I wanted to slap these people. Right. I wanted to bitch slap all these people because I'm thinking you're the adults. And here's a 17 or 18 year old kid who admittedly helped you through the worst time of your life. What do you think he was going through? You just let him go away. There was no, Uncle so-and-so came knocking on my door for 3 days straight, and finally I had to open the door, or he came and found me and drugged me back, or just let him leave.
They did say,
though. They gave him his space.
But they did say a couple times that he would, his phone would ring and he would see who it was and he wouldn't answer it.
True.
Well, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, his mother said that frequently.
Yeah, I get that. And they
so it's not like they weren't completely trying not to connect with or, you know, get back in touch with him.
Yeah, but for me, see, what pisses me off that is that's a phone call. I'm sorry, but if I had a kid or a nephew that was 17 or 18 years old and 9/11 just happened, I'd be like a freaking mother hen. I'd be pounding on some doors, knocking some people around, shoving some heads together, saying, where the fuck is this kid? I want to know where he is.
I agree with that, but I kind of think that his Uncle Blaine realize that he was trying to establish himself and was giving him space. Okay, I guess so. The question would be: is how, what's the time span that this book takes place? I think it's about less than a year.
No, he's 19 when the book starts.
But then he stays 19.
Well, it only takes 1 year. I mean, it kind of goes through a calendar year, doesn't it?
About a year, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I think it starts in like a February time frame, and then it ends.
And ends on New Year's Eve. Right.
Or shortly after.
I mean, because I think part of it, too, is, yes, I share, you know, the feeling that, you know, under normal circumstances, you might be, hey, you need to check in a little bit more. And being insistent on that. But I think the authors were trying to also make the point that all of these people were going through their own process with 9/11. Right. And recognizing that this kid's an adult. I mean, at 19, you are an adult. You keep turning around and pounding that into everybody's head, if memory serves.
True, but exactly. But what I'm saying about the time frame, let's say it took place over 10 months. And they connected with him. Well, first of all, Uncle Blaine realizes that he needs to move out, and he lets him move out, and he gives him his space. But then he sees him two or three times in that 10 months. And then, of course, towards the end, he sees him more often. But I don't know that it's all that far in between times. I don't know.
Good question, though.
Yeah, it is a good question. And I also kind of got the feeling with the uncle, the last conversation they have which was kind of, I thought, a little odd that they're both curled up on the bed together.
Yeah, they're talking about the way they're touching and stuff. I thought, okay.
Yeah, I was like, I'm wondering how, you know, I mean, it's just, or am I just, I was sort of thinking, am I just being Midwestern and prudish? But I kind of got the impression that the uncle, I kind of was reading into it that the uncle had was getting to the point where he had about enough. And he was going to start doing the pounding on the door kind of thing if the kid hadn't shown up.
You may be right. Especially the way he was reacting, like not letting him leave right then and put his arms around him and that kind of thing.
Well, and also, that he sort of was kind of being the uncle's age. Actually, I think I'm older than the uncle. You know, kind of taking a deep breath and going, whew, I played that one right, you know, as opposed to going in and storming and pounding my fist. Letting nature take its course was the right thing to do, and being patient was the right thing to do.
Right. That was my Words with Friends of you.
That's just that. I heard somebody's Words with Friends.
My iPad is too close because I have the book up on the screen. All right. Well, does anybody else have anything else you want to talk about, or should we go into some of these questions? Or
there's questions.
No. Oh, yeah, I didn't know you were going to join us, so I emailed people the questions from the author.
I'm in trouble.
No, you're okay, not. No, they're not. They're just like...
it's a test. Your whole grade depends on it and everything.
They're just, guess who's getting an F?
For you to be able to be in the next book club, you have to...
guess who's
just,
out?
Just discussion suggestions, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Actually, it's strip book club.
Mm-hmm. I'm already naked, so I guess I win.
Oh my!
Yeah, wow. Me too.
No, Michael, you win.
Sater, I knew.
Damn! Why isn't the video working on this thing?
Would you believe it's actually 20 degrees cooler here today, right now, than it was yesterday at the same time?
I do believe that because it's about the same thing here. It's 20 degrees cooler here too. Anyway.
Okay, questions?
Satyrs.
Oh, and Larkin, guess what today was? Just real quickly, just indulge me, honey. Guess what today, what opened today?
What
the
opened?
The Great Minnesota Get-Together.
Really? What's on a stick
State
this year?
Fair.
What's the new thing on a stick?
Actually, it's not on a stick. It's a corn dog pizza. Yum, yum. Sorry, honey.
I was going to say, I'm just about to go, hello, hello.
And yep. Now back to your regularly scheduled
Princess K of the Milky Way.
I was going to let Sater choose one of the questions since he went through the work of contacting the authors and having them come up with some discussion questions. So I definitely want to get to some of them. But Sater, I'm going to let you decide which one you'd like to discuss.
Sure. We kind of touched on this, but I like this question a lot. The author purposefully left some questions unanswered. What are examples of unanswered questions, and how do you, as a reader, react to those or develop your own answers?
Well, one that I can remember was when Gwendy was telling everybody about the the center for, you know, Gretchen something, whatever center, and how Roberta was going to be this part and Nick was going to be this part. But of course, they had to finish their degrees or their studying or whatever. We never got to find out if Nick is going to go back to school or not.
Do you think he does?
No, I don't. I think he goes to work with Gisella in the woodworking.
See, the ending is actually a great moment. He's left with, what, three different choices of what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, three different high-paying jobs for a 19-year-old in New York City. Oh, the reality of it.
Yes. That's...
I think that the most solid job is working with Uncle Blaine.
Yeah, that's the one you would take the safe route.
I would take the safe route. You're right.
So I think actually, the most satisfying one for him would be going with Grisella and learning a trade that he actually loved.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I think that's the safest one. Advertising agencies open and close every day in New York.
Actually, I think the safest one is staying with the interior design company that has already been, has a good reputation with.
And there's places for him to advance there, too.
But I think he jumps ship and goes with Gisella.
I do too.
Think he does too.
That's where he felt the happiest.
Mm-hmm. And then he has, besides, it's a whole another great book where he's got this great, wonderful, powerful female lesbian mentor. And then he can occasionally have brunch with the uncle and the boyfriend.
That just made me think of something else. When he was, he had access to that, to those friends' apartment. I don't even remember their names. And they went to California or something.
Oh, the actress and her husband, the photographer.
I thought that was very weird. Here's the keys to our apartment. You can use it whenever we're not in town. But he went there one time. That was it.
Well, I also thought
we're getting a new place. Here's the keys to our old place. It's yours now. I totally expected that.
That's what I was expecting too.
But they were renting before. Now they're so.
Because the wife was making money. But who in their right mind gives a 19-year-old keys to your place and say, go ahead, use it whenever you want?
Yes.
It's party central.
But don't you think we're led to believe that he's much more mature than the average 19-year-old?
Yeah, we don't see that.
In some ways he was, but in other ways he wasn't at all.
Well, I mean in terms of like the partying and drinking and stuff, he barely did that.
That's true. He barely drank. He smoked a lot of dope.
So, yeah. Also another unanswered one. What about his relationship with his brother,
Tony or Chuck?
Chuck.
Well, I think they become friends again. You know, brothers.
They hug. But and I'm probably going to sound like I'm beating the same old drum. But what about the relationship with the construction worker?
What about it? Because now he's got Davy, who is beauty personified, you're led to believe, in the novel. He's got this totally beautiful model boy who wants him.
I think he really enjoys the construction worker.
Really enjoy a construction worker?
What's the guy's name? What's the construction worker's name?
Does he have to have a name?
In terms of Jeff? His character.
Is it Jeff?
I don't know.
But, I mean, that character was... there. You know, that was one of the unanswered questions, was he makes sure that he gives... And it seemed like a big deal for this guy to give his phone number, his cell phone number, to Nick.
Yeah,
and he puts
true.
It into the cell phone. And it's like, this isn't something I do all the time. And he also made it really clear that he doesn't let somebody make him breakfast. In fact, he sounded like, most guys don't stay for breakfast. You're special. And so where was that going to lead? I mean, that was one big question mark, too, at the end.
And that's it. After that time, we never hear from him again.
No, because he conveniently goes out of town.
Do you know what this book is lacking?
What, more really sex?
A good editor that could have gotten rid of all the nonsense stuff that wasn't needed and more development of the plot in areas that would have made the book better.
Well, but here's the question about that, though. Did they throw that stuff in there on purpose to make it that way, or did it really need to be edited? I mean, we don't really know that.
Well, it comes back to what I said before, that this is the fifth book in what you could say was a loosely tied together series.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, and Larkin, so, I was wondering if they got a new editor for this book, because this book seemed very different to me than the other ones.
Yes. Of all the previous four, I enjoyed all of them, and I don't remember it being like, you know, when I was done with this book, it's like, yeah, what? You know, whatever.
I agree with that. And I do remember about the other four books, too, that I had a hard time putting them down because I was so interested in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But this very one, nice. As you know, I only finished it today, and I've had it for a month or so. So it didn't. Interesting. It just didn't hold my interest.
The construction worker's name is Dennis Fagan.
I knew it was a D. I knew it was a D. I was thinking Daniel, but there's already
Fagan,
another Daniel.
Fagan, though, there's an interesting...
Isn't it just the older man who takes care of the young... Yeah, very Dickensian.
Very Dickensian.
And Dennis Fagan's the perfect porn star name.
Sure is.
Just saying.
I got a picture of like a muscle daddy in my head for him.
Mm-hmm. I've seen a film with a man called Ray Dragon in it, and he just seemed the perfect casting for this. If he does, well, you know.
Was it
artistic.
One of those art films?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He has his own website and everything. He's in Toronto.
Wow. Okay.
but he's big, beefy, muscular, older, hairy, has a beard.
Okay, we know your type.
Ready for another question?
I was just going to say, let's explore another question, yes.
Moving on.
Nick finds friends in unexpected places, yet is sometimes betrayed by people he trusts. What does he learn, or how does he grow from some of these experiences?
Well, he learns not to tell Fred anything. Because Fred puts it on his barista blog or whatever that's called.
Is Fred really all that bad?
No, I don't think Fred's that bad.
I think Fred only did one bad thing, and that was outing Roberto's HIV status.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't think Fred did anything all that bad. That's just me, though.
No, I agree with you. And frankly, in a city like New York, where it's real dog-eat-dog, one of the things I found very interesting about that character was there were a lot of people in 2003 who were doing exactly that and making fortunes by turning their blogs into novels, which then became movies. I mean, Julie and Julia is a perfect example of that. That's how that all started.
Eat, love, sex, pray, fat, flaunt, whatever.
Well, did that start as a blog before the novel?
I don't know what it was.
Oh, okay. But, I mean, there's that one, and The Devil Wears Prada is another one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that one.
But, I mean, he didn't use any real names. He gave everyone a nickname. And really, as some of our podcaster friends, is that any different?
No, it is not. So, that's why I don't think he's all that bad. He just did one thing that wasn't good.
I think the worst thing that he did was he said things in his blog that he couldn't say or wouldn't say to his supposed friends, who he considered friends, or people like Nick who considered him friends. It's sort of like it was completely one way. He was just an open ear and was just listening for stuff to put on his blog and wasn't really his friend. I think that's the biggest crime he committed. He wasn't half a friend. He just wasn't a friend.
Ooh, but that paints him in a worse light than I thought. Than I was thinking.
Yeah, I would say that if you didn't see Fred trying to reach out and reconcile the friendship. But well, you see a couple times where Fred wants to be friends and wants to make up for this.
I think that's bad.
And two, Fred was not sharing his blog with everybody. It was only when people were finding it. It's like he wasn't going out and saying, oh, go read my blog. It was more like his personal journal that he just happened to put online. You know, and with no, like you said, without the names. So it wasn't like he was, you know, getting them to go find that he was being talking behind their backs and stuff.
And didn't it just seem a little, I don't know, it seemed a little formulaic, almost Sex in the City to me, that they all had to have a spa day. And at the end of the spa day, they had this, you know, come together moment and stuff. I mean, it was just sort of, it struck me as... I don't know a lot of gay men that would do that, let alone, you know, gay straight guy. It didn't seem, I don't know.
Spas are expensive.
I know.
Very. And they went to like the most expensive. I mean, it just seemed very Samantha Jones to me.
But, you know, Nick was able to justify it by having the credit card from his mom.
Yeah, that he never called.
Exactly.
Well, and speaking of parents, that was another, you know, kind of the questions or the people that betray him and how do you feel about it was that the father was painted as this total asshole. And there was like nothing lovable or redeeming about him at all. And I mean, I know that there are fathers like that, but I found that it just... I didn't find anything redeeming about him. It didn't seem like he loved any of his kids or loved his ex-wife or ex-wife-to-be. He seemed so black, so dark.
I agree.
It seemed unbelievable to me that, you know, and especially when he talked to him on Thanksgiving, it just seemed, it was like, you're going to be the really bad guy all the way through this book, no matter what. Nobody loves you, nobody, and you're bad, you have affairs. Everybody in town knows that you're porking everybody, and it seemed, I don't know, it just seemed very one-dimensional.
But interesting how they had, like, other people come around, like his mom comes around, Chuck comes around, but they don't let the father come around to it.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
But he didn't have a big part in the book overall.
No, it was very small.
I mean, and so you can't develop everybody's character.
Oh, but you can. You can try.
Well, you can try.
37 characters in a book.
In a book, they had 37 characters in a chapter. I mean, can you imagine filming that New Year's Eve party?
Oh, no way.
No. Well, if this was made into a movie, there would be like 5 characters.
Oh, yeah. They would totally have to edit that down. Well, Sater, do you want to pick like one or two more questions?
Sure. I'll be glad to. One reality in the lives of many gay men is the need for a created family. How do Nick's perceptions of the different families in his life shape his actions and decisions? See, I like this question because here in Monterey, I've recently found a gay circle of friends, which I haven't had for the first 8 years living here. And so this whole thing about finding a family, a support group, I can totally understand. And Nick's family, you know, he does have several. He's got his roommates, which they don't start out as a family, but eventually they, I think it's that. See, that's the thing about the Thanksgiving scene. Totally hated him for backing out on his real family for Thanksgiving. But then that whole Thanksgiving scene with the roommates was totally needed, I thought.
It was, yeah. But I thought his roommates start out as a dysfunctional family.
No more than
most roommates are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially at that age. And in New York, where you're really just thrown together if you can find a decent apartment and somebody to share a part of the rent.
But I don't know if I'd be able to live with Morgan with those snakes and she's such a bitch. I don't know.
Well, if you were sleeping with Roberto behind the sheet.
I think
Nick that hung as a wall. Yeah.
I think Nick would be more my type because he's tall and thin.
If you weren't head over heels in love already, honey.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right.
Good save.
Thank you for bringing me back down to earth.
It's all hypotheticals. I thought big and beefy was your type. I thought the construction worker was more your type. But, you know, one of the things that talking about created families, I think one of the very interesting dynamics, and someone's going to write their PhD dissertation or write a book about it, is the way that podcasters on issues or on topics of mutuality really create families. I mean, there's this incredible family. There's Scotty, and there's Arthur, and there's Honey, and there's Auntie Vera, and there's Big Fatty, and there's all these people from all over the world who really, I mean, not only love each other like family, but, you know, diss each other just like a really good family does, too. It's wonderful to listen. It's one of the best soap operas going.
Yeah, it runs the full gamut. There's love, hate, and evil, and everything in between. All variations and great. Yeah, exactly.
Can you imagine if we were all in the same room together?
Somebody would have to fucking die.
I would pay good money for that.
I would I would have to have sex with Wes Stone.
Well, I would fly in from anywhere to see that, and I the only other thing is alcohol would have to be served.
Oh, of course. I'll bring a couple cases of wine with me.
Of course.
Oh.
Just well, for you, right?
Larkin, as long as Larkin promises to introduce me to someone who works at the Lavender Library, that would be fine.
He can come to the meeting, too.
Come on up. Big Fatty is going to be in San Francisco this spring.
I know.
So you need to come on out. And
I'll be joining you for that.
Are you going to go?
Cool.
I'm only here in Monterey. I'd love to meet Big Fatty.
Yeah, and he's only like 7 or 8 hours away.
From you?
No, from where they're going to be, right?
No.
Well, no, because he's starting down in Southern California going all the way up to San Francisco. So
So you're on the way.
Yeah, San Francisco is only a couple hours away from me. In fact, I'm going there tomorrow night.
Oh, lucky you. I went to Berkeley for grad school.
Does the Impaler have a date?
Not yet, but he might.
I see. Well, before we get distracted once again.
Sorry.
Is there anything we want to wrap up this book club podcast with?
I would like to read something from the book.
Okay.
Do you guys mind if I do that?
Is it going to make me cry?
No, it's just...
is it a page 278?
It's a page 278, Jesus. Yeah.
Oh, good that's, like, callback. That's like the last page, isn't it?
No, it's not. It goes all the way up to 291.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm glad you're going to read that, Larkin.
You mean Scotty.
Sater.
Oh, I'm sorry, Scotty. I'm Sater. Whoever.
That's all right.
That's, oh, my.
The whole point of the novel to me comes down to something that Daniel says to Nick. And he says, well, Nick asks him, how does anyone know what's real? And Daniel replies, it's all real. The beauty and the grime, the truth and the lies, what we have and what we're missing. When life throws shit at you, you use it as manure in your garden. I just really like that comment.
Yeah, that does kind of, like, say it all, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It does indeed.
And it also, you know, really tells Nick, no matter what you get, you got to use it all.
Mm-hmm.
All
and he also says, don't let anyone tell you otherwise. And I like that.
Overall, I like the novel. It held me at times. I really liked the letters from home and from friends.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that. I like those letters, too, because that gave us more insight to things.
I thought you learned a lot more about Nick from those letters than you did from Nick himself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but you know what? But you know what I thought on top of that was, who sends letters still? This is 2003. Who's sending letters?
Well, these could be emails.
Some of them were.
Oh, yeah. I guess they could be emails.
And, you know, he did, because he left his computer behind, so the only way you could...
That's right.
And he wouldn't answer his phone, so that was the only way people could get a hold of him.
You're right.
And I have friends who still write letters. They love the art of writing a letter and putting it in the mail and sending it off.
Well, my handwriting is atrocious. I'm not writing any letters.
Yeah, Mama wanted me to be a doctor.
Well, thank God you're a construction worker, honey. I mean, you know... Nobody has to read your handwriting. I mean, you'd have to print otherwise.
Exactly. I print the best.
Yeah, and I also really liked I agree. I did like the novel. I liked the other ones better, but I did overall liked it. But I liked the epistle format, that keeping letters, because it's such a wonderful part of English literature and American literature, is to use letters to move forward plot lines.
Yeah, like The Color Purple. I don't know if you read that book. That book was completely done in letter form. Yeah. If we're talking about the overall book, I can't say that I loved it. It was okay. I liked it. But as Timothy said, I preferred the four other books better. But there were certain scenes in the book that I liked. I really liked the scene with him talking with his mother, you know, getting that whole story out about them possibly divorcing and all that stuff. And then when he had the discussion with Uncle Blaine about, you know, being there and all that kind of stuff, I thought that was really good too. I mean, so there were certain little scenes that I really enjoyed, but I can't say that the book overall was like the best thing ever, you know. So, anybody else final comments?
Well, it probably wasn't the best book for me to be introduced to this particular set of writers, but I didn't hate it. I actually liked it in some ways. I just finished Bret Easton Ellis' latest book, Imperial Bedrooms, and I enjoyed it more than that book. And he's my god, so...
That's interesting, because I read his very first book. What was it called? Less Than Zero, was it?
Yes.
Nothing has lived up to that first book that he's written, I'm sorry to say, but go ahead.
Well, I have to agree with that.
Yeah, Imperial Bedrooms is the sequel to Less Than Zero.
Okay.
And that was just released in June 13th, I think.
Well, maybe I'll have to give him another chance, but he's done a couple other books in between, and they were just awful.
So I enjoyed this book better than that Imperial Bedrooms.
Okay.
And I love Bret Easton Ellis, so that says something. It was nice. It was nice.
Okay. Larkin, do you have any final words about the book?
Nope.
Timothy? Or did you already say yours?
I think I already said mine. I love the idea of having. I particularly like gay and lesbian murder mysteries. And I had belonged to a book club, and it was always hard to, you know, get people and have somebody host it at their home and make sure there was wine and other beverages for people to enjoy. And so I love the idea of having an online book club. I know this isn't the only one, but I think it's great. And thank you for including me.
Well, absolutely, and you were definitely invited for the next book. So,
which is
it's called Getting It by Alex Sanchez. Now, Alex Sanchez writes quote unquote coming of age novels, mostly high school kids. He's written Rainbow Boys, Rainbow. It's like a 4-book series. I have them all on my shelf. I can't think of the names of all of them though.
Rainbow High, Rainbow Road, The God Box.
Yeah, I'm looking at the end of this book because I downloaded the book on... It's Rainbow Road, Rainbow High, So Hard to Say So, or So Hard to Say, and Getting It. Oh, you also wrote Bait, but I haven't read Bait. I haven't read Bait yet.
Shall I read the synopsis? That way people know what it's about?
Good idea. Yes, please
Great.
Do.
15-year-old Carlos Amorosa is a virgin, and he isn't happy about it. He'd love to hook up with gorgeous Roxy, but she has no idea he's alive.
Did you Skype out?
Mm-hmm.
Skype out again.
Yeah, you Skyped out. Didn't know he was alive.
Watching a TV show one night gives Carlos an idea. What if he got a makeover from Sal, a senior at his high school who's gay? Sal agrees, but only if Carlos helps him start a gay-straight alliance. Carlos doesn't expect the catch. What are his friends going to think? And is he ever going to get what he wants?
Oh, my goodness. Now, I will say about Alex Sanchez's books, they are extremely fast reads because I think he writes them for high school kids.
I was going to say, this sounds like it's for a younger audience.
It really is. But
great. But
if you like the coming-of-age novel kind of thing, this will be for you. So,
sign me up.
Absolutely. Getting It by Alex Sanchez. Now, today is August 26th, and I think we're going to give until September 30th to read this book. Only because I'm going back to work on Monday, and I have another book, a professional book, that I have to start reading on Monday. So, I'm going to get a little caught up with reading. So, is everybody okay with September 30th being the next book club podcast?
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good. And I hope anybody who's listening to this who wants to join in as well will let me know and read the book too. I know we had several people, at least on Twitter and listeners, who told me that they read this book but couldn't join in on the chat. So, speaking of the chat, I have totally ignored the chat room. Is anything going on in the chat room?
Yeah, they're telling me not to talk so much. And they're right.
Really? Who said that?
No, they're not.
I would have written that if I'd been in the chat room, but I was talking too much.
No, I would just say,
I can think of other things you can do with your mouth.
Oh, that's because you've seen my picture.
I would just say, Timothy, take your Ritalin before you come on the next show. I'm just teasing with you.
Isn't that something they give small children? Why would you know anything about that, honey?
Because I know some adults who take it, so. I'm totally kidding with you, Timothy. I'm so glad that you joined us.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we need to wrap this up. So thank you all so much for joining me on this book club podcast. And I'm sure that some of you will join me for the next one on September 30th. But I'll give you each a couple seconds to plug something if you'd like. Michael Sage, what would you like to plug?
You can find my blog at michaelonsage.blogspot.com. Go Larkin.
Excellent. Larkin?
I have nothing right now. My brain is dead.
All right. Timothy?
Since I mentioned it earlier, I just want to plug the Twin Cities GLBT Library, and you can find them at Quatrefoil Library, Quatrefoil Library.org.
All right. And Sater?
I'd like to plug Timothy.
Bless your heart.
But since he's in lovely Minnesota, the heart of God's country, thank you very much.
Yeah, but I've heard your impaler's that big.
It's huge.
I would like to plug Seder 69 on the audio booze.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, then, boys, why don't you say it with me? Until next time. Bye.
Bye.